Myths and legends, tales as old as time. There are many stories told about the black bear, and it can often be a chore knowing just what to believe. Fear not, as we are on hand to untangle fiction from reality. There is a place in the remote northwoods of Minnesota, North America. It's located near the town of Orr, population approximately 300. Outside this town is an area where normal rules are put to one side. It's a place where humans and wildlife meet. It's a special place, wholly unique and not without its controversies. This is the Vince Schuette Wildlife Sanctuary, run by the American Bear Association, ABA for short. The ABA is dedicated to promoting a better understanding of black bears and all wildlife through education, observation, and experience. I'm your host, Philip Stubley, and welcome to the Bear Den. Hello once again. Listening to the credits there, I'm hoping that after this episode, you'll have a better understanding of black bears, so I can tick that box. This episode's theme is all about myths and misconceptions surrounding black bears. We hear a lot of half-truths about bears, half-remembered facts, or I should say factoids. A factoid is a piece of information that is so often repeated it becomes accepted as fact, but it is in fact incorrect. For instance, you can see the Great Wall of China from space with the naked eye. Right or wrong? Wrong. Ooh, I kind of felt like Jonathan Frakes in Beyond Belief. If you haven't already, check out Jonathan Frakes telling you you're wrong on YouTube. You won't regret it. So we'll start off with a new section that I'm very excited about. It's the Subspecies Spotlight. Black bears are versatile and adaptable creatures. There are 16 subspecies of North American black bear. They are classified as subspecies because of slight variations in appearance or difference in DNA. Join me as I explore these subspecies and what makes them unique in their own way. Since this episode's theme encompasses myths of black bears, I thought for this spotlight I'd talk about a bear with some interesting mythology surrounding it. Enter bear stage left, and this time it's the Haida Gwaihi black bear. Hopefully I said that right. So the scientific name is Ursus Americanus Carlotti. They are endemic to the Haida Gwaihi, also known as the Queen Charlotte Islands, an archipelago located off the northern Pacific coast of Canada. This is often referred to as the Galapagos of the North. The bears are considered a keystone species due to their dispersal of salmon remains, providing rich fertilizer for the forests of the Haida Gwaihi. In October, the salmon spawning period lasts around 45 days, during which time the bears will accumulate something in the region of 70% of their annual protein intake. They also forage in the intertidal zone for crabs, sea urchins, beach hoppers, clams, mussels, and barnacles. This subspecies of black bear was first described by Osgood in 1901. In the local language, they are referred to as Tarn. In Haida mythology, the bears are considered family. There's an old legend called Bear Mother or Tarn Agwa. One day, a young woman was picking berries, but found that the bears had eaten most of them. She became angry and blamed the bears for her bad luck. The bears heard her and became agitated and stole her away. At first, the young woman missed her family and village, but she found solace in the bear village. Later, she married the bear father and they had two bear cubs. Years later, the woman finally returned to her village to teach the people to respect the bears. What makes them unique is that they are actually the largest subspecies of black bear, bigger than any of the mainland species, or indeed the world, reportedly, making them the largest black bear, period, with large craniums and molars. Their large jaws allow them to quickly eat whole crabs and barnacles, and they've only ever been reported in the black colour phase. Their status is, alas, unknown, and hunting is the main threat to the Haida Gwaihi bear. In 1995 and 2004, the Council of the Haida Nation called for an end to recreational bear hunting. Hunting does continue on the islands, but it is limited to just 4 bears per year. So, now we move on to some of the common myths and misconceptions of black bears. I've trawled through the backwoods of the internet and compiled this list based on reading several sources. I've tried not to tread over too much old ground. I focused on things we haven't discussed much so far, but inevitably there'll be some minor repetition of previous information. Here's my list of myths and the facts after them, so I hope you're ready for some truth bombs. So, internet, what have we got?
Black bears cannot wake up during hibernation, and mothers give birth in their sleep.
For a while, scientists have gone back and forth over whether or not bears enter hibernation or torpor. Torpor is often referred to as a deep sleep. Bears have not been considered true hibernators. However, according to new studies, this statement is said to be wrong, as they decrease their metabolism, just like small hibernators do. Many species of rodents and bats drop their body temperatures very dramatically, some to near freezing. A hibernating bear's metabolism drops to 25% of its normal level, but the difference in black bears to small hibernators is there isn't a significant decrease in a black bear's body temperature. Black bears can be said to be highly efficient hibernators. I'm somewhat covering my bases here, but I will say that during the winter, bears can wake up quickly and easily if necessary, which is a characteristic of torpor. So whatever this process is referred to, we can probably all agree, bears do enter a significant period of physical inactivity and display some amazing adaptations to low temperatures and food scarcity. The bears don't need to eat or drink, and they rarely need to use the bathroom, if at all. They may leave their den if they need to fix any damage or flooding from snow. Their sleeping behaviour is similar to that of a dog. They go through posture changes and move around the den if restless. This shifting and moving prevents pressure sores from developing and helps keep them warm through the chilly winter. And it is a myth that mothers sleep through childbirth. As nice as that may sound, mothers do wake up and take care of the helpless cubs. As a little side note, during the year that the black bear is on its feet a lot of the time and their feet pads become tough and calloused. It was once believed that bears obtained nutrients from sucking their paws during hibernation. This idea most likely came about from observations of bears licking the bottom of their paws during the last half of the denning period when the old foot pads slough off. The sucking, licking, and chewing apparently helps toughen the new foot pads up so bears can walk on them without pain or difficulty when they emerge from the den and begin searching for food.
Menstruating women attract bears.
So, lack of evidence is the biggest reason why this myth can be debunked. There is actually a fair amount of information about this on the internet. I can't claim to have done this research myself, so I'll drop some links in the show notes if you wish to explore these issues further. Apparently, there were government brochures warning people about this, and this was because in 1967, grizzly bears in Glacier National Park killed a menstruating woman and a woman with tampons in her purse. This was the incident known as the Night of the Grizzlies, where two women were killed by two different grizzlies on the same night. If you want to know more about that, National Park After Dark podcasts have a gripping two-parter on that. Officials knew that some dogs are attracted to menstrual odours, so women were warned not to enter or work in bear country during menstruation. Dr. Steve Herrero reviewed over 100 deaths by grizzly bear and found the woman in Glacier National Park was the only menstruating victim on record. And a review of black bear attacks since 1900 found no instances of black bears killing menstruating women. In a study conducted by the US Forest Service by Rogers et al., named Reactions of Black Bears to Human Menstrual Odors in 1991, used tampons were literally drug across the noses of black bears. More specifically, used tampons from 15 women were bundled in packs of 5 and then presented to groups of black bears feeding on garbage. The black bears were offered the used tampons 15 times. This gave the black bears a choice of feeding on garbage or feeding on tampons. Every single time, the black bear opted for the garbage. So ladies, if you want to go hiking, feel free any time. Interestingly, in 1983, researcher Bruce Cushing offered used tampons, seal meat, and non-menstrual human blood to polar bears. Lab testing and field testing were both a part of this 1983 study. For the lab work, 5 bears were captured in the wild and brought to a wildlife laboratory where they were presented with different scents. The scents of the bear's most common food source, seals, were presented to the bears individually, as were used tampons, and the blood of women on their period. While the bears remained inactive for the majority of the time in captivity, the scent of a seal elicited a major response, including pacing, sniffing towards the source of the scent, and biting the cage. And when presented with the other scents, the polar bears did not display any noteworthy reactions. The only exception to this was the scent of used tampons. As used tampons were presented to polar bears, they exhibited a reaction nearly as intense as when presented with the scent of a seal. The polar bears ate the used tampons and seal meat, but ignored the non-menstrual blood, suggesting a preference for menstrual blood. For the field study, 42 stakes were driven into the ground, so approximately 40 centimetres remained above ground. A variety of scents were put on the stakes at varying times and the behaviour of the polar bears was observed. For the menstrual blood portion of the testing, 5 millilitres of menstrual blood was put on paper towels, which were secured to the top of each one of the stakes. Every time a polar bear was downwind from the stakes, their behaviour was recorded in detail. The study found that used tampons were a scent of significant interest to polar bears. This study does have detractors, however, who say the research methods were flawed. For the most part, the majority of people probably aren't planning an Arctic hike, so I guess we shouldn't worry too much about this.
Bears have poor eyesight.
Bears have similar vision to humans and can see in colour. They have excellent night vision because of a reflective layer that lines the back of their eyeball. Along with other nocturnal animals, this reflective layer gives bears that green glow in their eyes when flashed with a light at night. So like when you're driving at night with your headlights on and you see an animal on the road, for instance.
A bear standing on its hind legs is getting ready to attack.
If a bear is standing on its hind legs, they are simply trying to see, hear, or smell something that is in their immediate environment. It's easier to detect these by standing because of the higher vantage point. Usually they stand up because something has caught their attention and they're just naturally inquisitive.
People travelling in bear country are often attacked.
Attacks initiated by black bears are very rare. The chances of being killed by a domestic dog, bees, or lightning are vastly greater. Most negative encounters are preventable. Nervous bears will let you know they are uneasy by making huffing noises, snapping their jaws, or advancing with short charges. Most of the time, the bear has probably already made a swift exit before you even knew it was there. Now, what do we do if we see a black bear? Say this with me. If you encounter a black bear, talk in a soothing voice while backing away slowly and avoiding direct eye contact. Give the bear their space.
Shooting or relocating a conflict bear will solve the problem.
Before attempting more drastic measures, non-lethal hazing techniques such as paintballs, rubber balls, loud noises such as shouting, banging on pots and pans, if you're in a car, honking the horn or revving the engine, even throwing rocks, are affordable ways to deal with immediate problems if a bear is visiting somewhere it is not welcome. Trained dogs such as the Karelian bear dogs can chase bears away in order to ultimately save that bear, but I understand bear dogs are not always the most affordable deterrent. For reasons of public safety, it may become necessary to kill an individual bear. However, neither relocation or shooting a bear are permanent or effective in the long term. Relocated bears often try to return home where they feel comfortable. If they do survive the journey back, they usually pick right up where they left off. Even if that bear has been killed or relocated, if an attractant is not removed, another bear will rise up to take the previous one's place. Bears remember a reliable food source and will return if that is not removed. You should not unintentionally or intentionally feed bears, as the situation rarely works out for the bears. Take the 2010 case of the pot bears in British Columbia, Canada. Most problem bears are a result of unintentional feeding or attractants, but there was a media sensation caused by the so-called pot bears after police discovered intentional feeding of over 20 black bears during an investigation of an alleged marijuana growing operation in Christina Lake. Sidebar, the bears were not eating pot as far as I know. I guess they just have a taste for cocaine. Dubois and Fraser, in 2013, studied this instance and it transpired generations of bears had been fed on the property and locals knew about this and were not very concerned. Indeed, they acted as a useful deterrent for anyone who might be snooping around. Nicknames such as dump bears had even been given to bears that normally foraged on the local landfill. However, they were all displaced when all of this was closed in 2010 and it left the bears without their usual source of food before winter. These bears, you could say, had the munchies, and had become habituated to these conditions, so once supplemental feeding had stopped, more bears were seen roaming through the streets and trying to feed on human waste and trees in people's gardens. The result was 24 bears were destroyed in 2011, a significant increase on the then previous high of 4 bears killed in 2004. With lethal measures, there's always a public versus expert debate. Relocation is preferred as most people see bears, like the pot bears, as quote-unquote forced into a life of crime, and it was not a situation of their own making. Notions of fairness and justice are often explored, but once an animal is food conditioned, there is no particularly attractive management option. Relocation is not viable or seen as inhumane to experts, especially when the recommended area has to be approximately 60 kilometers away to achieve an 80% likelihood of it not returning. Killing, though, is seen as inhumane by the public, though it's a tricky situation with no easy answers, and it's usually the bears who are the ones that pay the ultimate price. So, don't feed bears.
Bears that eat human food won't want anything else.
Black bears are generalists, or opportunistic omnivores. They will eat anything they get their paws on, be it from nature's bounty or a greasy diner. If access to human food such as trash, bird feeders or pet food is easy and requires little effort, bears will continue to eat that food until access to it has been removed. So let's quickly take a look at black bears' natural diet. There are two terms we should familiarise ourselves with, hard and soft mast. Hard mast includes nuts and seeds and soft mast includes berries and crab apples. Both are important food sources year-round to bears. In northern regions, such as northern Minnesota, black bears' diet is roughly 85% vegetable matter, including berries, which in a good soft mast, a bear can consume 30,000 berries in one day. The other 10 to 15% of their diet is made up of insects and meat. The main protein source is ant broods. Ant brood is the whitish larva and pupae within an ant colony that eventually develops into adults. These contain about 80 to 90% protein. Putting this into perspective, beef is about 20% protein. Bears have long, sticky tongues that allow them to search into colonies under rocks, moss, and ground litter. This food source is especially important in years where the berry crops fail. In the area around the sanctuary, hazelnuts are a critical food source for bears. In 24 hours, a black bear can eat 4,000 or more hazelnuts. A good hard mast increases growth and reproductive success in bears and can be the difference between life and death for some. During the years when hard and soft masts are in abundance, reports of conflict bear activity is commonly lower and cub birth rates are higher in the year after. So, long story short, bears will eat just about anything they can get into. Many people in the US live in or near black bear habitat. Bears often pass through neighborhoods in search for food. This is natural bear behavior, and a lot of the time this is due to humans building houses in historic bear territory and wildlife corridors. If people have stored their food and trash properly, a bear will continue on its merry way. However, bears that gain access to trash or unnatural food in towns may eventually lose their fear of people, which can then become a public safety risk, and I would say revisit the earlier statement on how relocation or shooting a bear doesn't work.
Play dead or climb a tree during a black bear attack.
One of the first things a cub learns when coming out of the den is how to climb a tree. Black bears get a lot of practice at this to the point it becomes second nature. Their short, sharp, recurved claws make them excellent climbers. If the worst happens and you are attacked by a black bear, absolutely do not play dead. With a black bear, you must fight back by any means necessary. The play dead tactic is advice commonly associated with grizzly bears. If the grizzly continues to attack even after you play dead, you may have to fight back and hit that bear in the face and muzzle. Remember though, bear attacks are rare, but it's better to be bear aware. Knowing is half the battle, right?
A mother black bear with cubs is always dangerous.
If threatened, a mother bear may bluff charge, but this is uncommon. As defined by the US National Park Service, bluff charges are meant to scare or intimidate. When a bear bluff charges, it will have its head and ears up and forward. The bear will puff itself up to look bigger. It will bound on its front paws toward you, moving in big leaps, but then stop short or veer off to one side. If a bear does bluff charge, it's important that you don't run, stand your ground and stay calm. Once the bear has bluff charged, you should back away slowly, keep an eye on the bear and let it know that you're human. Saying all this, it's more likely a mother black bear will send her cubs up a tree or flee. It's very rare for a black bear mother to attack someone in defense of her cubs. Grizzly bear mothers, on the other hand, are more likely to act in this situation. Grizzlies have evolved on the open plains, have nowhere to hide, so attack is the best form of defense for them, while black bears, having evolved in the cover of the forest, will seek a hiding place. Generally, black bears are unlikely to attack someone, regardless if they are a mother with cubs or not.
Black bears growl.
Black bears are known for huffing, grunting, and moaning noises. This common misconception comes from TV and movies using bears as a frightening character that growls and roars to chilling effect. Apparently, most of the time what you're hearing is a wolf growl. So I found in the movie Cocaine Bear, the bear's growls and other sounds were created using a mix of real animal sounds and special effects for, I quote, to enhance the dramatic and comedic elements of the film.
Black bears can't run downhill and you can outrun them.
Basically, bears can run downhill. Simple as. A black bear's average maximum speed is 30 miles per hour. And a human's is between 10 to 15 miles per hour. So, you do the maths. Running away from a black bear is a bad idea, as it invokes a chase response, making you come across as prey or play. So that's about it for common myths and misconceptions. If you know of any that I haven't mentioned and want to hear about, get in touch. We'll wrap things up while also staying on topic. We'll finish by discussing a bear that was a bit of a legend in his own time. We're going to hear from Mia Marquez now, who will introduce herself and tell us about a black bear at the sanctuary that she is connected with.
Hello. Like you said, I'm Mia. I've been coming to the sanctuary since 2019. 2020, I was hired on as a manager and have basically been here ever since. Over that time, I've gotten to connect with a lot of bears, but definitely the one that I've connected with most is a bear named Kenai. He absolutely is my favorite bear. Getting to see these bears year after year and just sort of throughout the summers really gives you a cool opportunity to connect with the bears and get to know them and their personalities a little bit more. One of my favorite things about Kenai is the fact that he is a huge bear. He is one of the biggest bears that we have here at the sanctuary. Despite that, I don't think he realizes just how big he is. I think he sometimes forgets that he is one of the larger, more dominant bears, but he really just likes to watch other bears and just watch what's going around and watch the people too. He'll just sort of sit there quietly and just take in everything that's going on around him. That being said, he doesn't let the other bears mess with him at all. I've seen him slap yearlings who try and get a little bit too close so loud that you could quite literally hear it. And so he doesn't take anything from anyone still. One of my favorite times that he's sort of shown his dominance over the other bears was him and one of the other staff favorites, a bear named Hades. We're sort of arguing over a rock that Kenai likes to sit on. It's everyone's favorite set of rocks, but Kenai usually wins them. And Hades and him were sort of starting to fight over it. Hades started bellowing, got up on his hind legs, ready to fight. And Kenai, rather than bellow back at him or slap him or anything, just gets up on the rock and sits down while staring at him. Hades was so taken back from it that he just sort of fell backwards and was like, oh, wait, what am I doing? And so just how Kenai sort of won that dominance battle without having to do a bellow, without having to do anything, it just really showed how big of a role he played in the sanctuary's hierarchy, which was really fun. At the same time, he is also a complete sweetheart. Another one of the staff favorite bears, Elsa, had cubs in 2023, and she's very much a mom who lets her cubs wander. And one of those cubs in the middle of hyperphagia started sneaking slowly towards Kenai as he was eating, and she was just moving very, very slowly towards him. Kenai noticed this, of course, and would just give out sort of a very light bellow as a warning, being like, hey kid, stop it, don't come any closer. This didn't stop her at all, and so she just kept moving forward until she finally was basically at the food site with Kenai. Rather than doing anything bad or anything, Kenai just very lightly raised his paw and sort of gave her a nice gentle tap on the head, being like, hey kid, like, this is how close you are to me. You should really move away. Which of course scared the cub. She went crying out to mom, who went into full protective mode and chased Kenai off. But it was just a really cool behavior to see that despite this being one of our most dominant bears, he was very patient with this cub who wasn't his and was like, I don't want to do anything, but you are getting too close. So like something needs to be done, but I'm not going to actually do anything. Like I said, he's just very much a gentle bear who just likes to observe and see what's going on. Doesn't act rashly. Just the sweetest thing ever. He's this huge bear who doesn't realize he's big. When he was younger, he would go to play on the cedar pile with the other bears, but they would get scared off because he was just so much bigger than they were. And so all of that sort of together just sort of made him a bear that all of us here at the sanctuary really loved. Whenever he would come in, everyone just would get excited to see him and to talk with him a little bit. I definitely have told that bear way more about my life than most people. So yeah, that's Kenai.
So a little addendum to that. When Mia and I recorded that back in September 2024, Kenai had not been seen at the sanctuary. He usually arrives around the end of June and has done consistently for at least the last 10 years, so we did assume he would not be returning. Cut to October 24th, when staff are busy winding down, most bears have left, and we are essentially ready to close for the season, a really skinny bear wanders into the sanctuary. One that looked very familiar, and after some debate, we confirmed that it was Kenai. He came in with a leg injury, which he must have been dealing with for some time. A bear is resourceful, adaptable, and in the case of Kenai, tenacious, as it must have been a great effort to make it to the sanctuary, a place that he knew was safe. If an injured animal turns up at the sanctuary, we do make a judgment call on how to proceed, and seek expert advice to inform our decisions. We are a sanctuary after all, and if an animal arrives, we will provide for individual needs on a case-by-case basis. With it being so close to denning season, we decided we would provide for Kenai and give him a fighting chance to, at the very least, have enough energy to find a safe place to den. Staff gave Kenai plenty of nutritious food to help him on his way. Kenai ended up staying into November and left around Thanksgiving time. Fingers crossed we see him return in 2025. And if you're listening to this in the future, say hello from me. In the next episode, we are going to focus on bear behaviours and talk about a book that I came across in 2016 and have revisited often. Out on a Limb by bear researcher and rehabber Benjamin Kilham. See you there. The Bear Den, the American Bear Association podcast, was written and presented by me, Philip Stubley. The music was composed by React Music. Thank you to everyone who has helped make this podcast possible, including Karen Hausman, Bill Lee, Clary Lee, Stephanie Horner, Donna Brzezinka, Ross Coyer, and Angie Page. You can find out more about the American Bear Association at www.americanbear.org. You can find Vince Shuti Wildlife Sanctuary on Facebook and Instagram. You can ask questions and submit comments about the podcast to pstubley@americanbear.org. The ABA is a special circumstance. We do not condone feeding wild animals. If you enjoy this podcast, help support the ABA either by donating, becoming an ABA member, symbolically adopting a bear, or come visit the sanctuary during the season and say hello. And if you do enjoy this, please do us a favour. It'll barely take any of your time, I promise. On whatever platform you're listening to this on, please either follow us, click the bell for updates, notifications, please share with family and friends, and rate the podcast, as it all helps us grow and is greatly appreciated.